States government.
This is VOA News. I'm Michael Brown. Israel has decided to reopen a crossing into northern Gaza to allow more humanitarian aid into the hard-hit area. The move follows a warning from U.S. President Joe Biden to Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu during a phone call on Thursday that the United States would potentially condition support for Israel's offensive in Gaza on it taking concrete steps to protect aid workers and civilians. Freddie Joyner reports.
At the White House, spokesperson John Kirby declined to elaborate on what specific changes the U.S. would make to its policy toward Israel and Gaza, but said the U.S. expected to see an announcement from Israel on steps it's taking to protect civilians and aid workers in the coming hours and days.
We want to see that even as the Israelis work through their investigation, that they are willing and able to take practical, immediate steps to protect aid workers on the ground and to demonstrate that they have that civilian harm mitigation in place.
Israel said on Thursday it would adjust tactics in the Gaza war after describing the attack as the result of a misidentification and that findings from an investigation would be made public soon.
Freddie Joyner reporting. President Biden on Friday will visit the U.S. city of Baltimore, where a cargo ship struck the Francis Scott Key Bridge, causing it to collapse.
As we all know, 6 individuals tragically lost their lives when the Francis Scott King Bridge collapsed last week. They were hard workers laboring in the middle of the night to repair potholes on a bridge that tens of thousands of travelers crossed every day. The president will meet with loved ones of those individuals during his trip tomorrow.
White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre. The Biden administration has approved $60 million in immediate aid and promised the federal government will pay the full cost to rebuild the bridge. For more news, join us at voanews.com. This is VOA News. A new report says that thousands of illegally trafficked firearms in the United States came through unlicensed dealers. We get the full details from the AP's Lisa Dwyer.
New data released by the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives says that more than 68,000 illegally trafficked firearms in the U.S. between 2017 and 2021 came through unlicensed dealers who are not required to perform background checks and are not required to keep records of their sales. Almost 60% of closed cases during that time period that could be traced involved people who had previously been convicted of a felony. The Biden administration has separately proposed a rule that would require thousands more gun sellers to get licensed and run background checks. That proposal quickly drew protests from gun rights groups who contend it would ensnare regular people who sometimes sell their own guns. I'm Lisa Dwyer.
Rescue workers on Thursday continue to save people who remain trapped following the strongest earthquake to hit Taiwan in 25 years. Authorities say at least 10 people died, more than 1,000 were injured in Wednesday's 7.4 magnitude quake. Currently, 18 people remain missing. U.S. authorities are trying to track down the thieves who stole as much as $30 million in a burglary in Los Angeles. We get the details from the AP's Norman Hall.
Thieves got away with $30 million in cash from a money storage facility in Los Angeles by breaking into the building on Easter Sunday. Police Commander Elaine Morales told the Los Angeles Times, which broke the news of the crime, that the thieves were able to breach the building as well as the safe where the money was stored. The operators of the business did not discover the massive theft until they opened the vault Monday. Media reports identified the facility as a location of Garda World, a global cash management and security company. The LAPD is saying only that the theft is being investigated with the FBI. I'm Norman Hall.
A judge has ruled that migrant children in makeshift camps along the U.S.-Mexico border, waiting to be processed by Border Patrol, are in the agency's custody. While advocates argue the federal government is responsible for the children, the federal government contends smugglers send migrants to camps they are not yet in federal custody. NASA says it's investigating whether an object that crashed into the roof of a home in the state of Florida came from the International Space Station. The 2-pound object was taken from Naples, Florida to the Kennedy Space Center to be examined. No one was hurt at the home. For more news, please join us at our website, voanews.com, or the VOA mobile app. I'm Michael Brown, VOA News.
Welcome to the Break Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Jens Balti in Washington. Today is Friday, April 5th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The Speaker of South Africa's Parliament resigns and is arrested and charged with corruption.
Nosiviwe Mapisa Nqula's arrest is yet another reputational blow to the governing African National Congress Party, or ANC, as it gears up for what is predicted to be South Africa's most contentious election.
Somalia said it expelled Ethiopia's ambassador in Mogadishu and ordered the closure of two consulates. Malawi lawmakers tussle over proposed age limits for presidential and parliamentary candidates. Zimbabwe's central bank is expected to announce a gold-backed currency today, Friday. Kenyan doctors vow to continue their 23-day-old strike despite a court order to end it.
The government has not obeyed court orders on three occasions. So the union leaders say that they cannot call off the strike when the government itself has not gone to court with clean hands.
And Nigeria's Electricity Regulatory Commission defends the recent increase in electricity tariffs. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's polls are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The former Speaker of South Africa's Parliament has been arrested and charged with multiple counts of corruption one day after she resigned her position. Kate Bartlett reports from Johannesburg.
Nosiviwe Mapisa Nqula's arrest is yet another reputational blow to the governing African National Congress Party, or ANC, as it gears up for what is predicted to be South Africa's most contentious election since the end of apartheid. Mapisa Nqula, a 67-year-old veteran of the anti-apartheid struggle, resigned as Speaker of the House and a Member of Parliament on Wednesday night before turning herself in at a police station on Thursday. She was charged in court with 12 counts of corruption and one of money laundering, stemming from her time as defense minister. She is accused of having taken bribes worth around $120,000 from a former military contractor to secure a contract. Mapisa Nqula was released on bail after appearing in court, where she denied any wrongdoing but said she had stepped down to protect her party. In a statement, ANC spokeswoman Malengi Bengu Matsiri thanked her for stepping aside.
We thank all of those that have participated in the process of scrutiny, and we continue to say that the rule of law comes first and foremost.
However, the scandal couldn't come at a worse time for the ANC. The party, which has controlled the presidency and parliament for 30 years, is expected to get less than 50% of the vote for the first time ever in elections on May 29. Multiple polls show the once-storied party of Nelson Mandela has lost popularity due to, among other things, numerous corruption scandals. Kate Bartlett for VOA News, Johannesburg.
Pandemonium erupted in the Malawi parliament on Thursday as tensions flared among lawmakers from the main opposition Democratic Progressive Party, or the DPP, over a proposed bill aimed at capping the age for presidential and parliamentary candidates at 80 years. The situation forced the second deputy speaker of parliament to suspend those involved in the dispute. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
The proposed legislation seeks to amend some sections of the Malawi Constitution by limiting the maximum age to 80 years for those aspiring for the office of the President, Vice President, and a Member of Parliament. In a motion, lawmaker Welani Chilinga says these positions are supposed to be occupied by energetic people for meaningful and maximum productivity. He has long been against the move by DPP President Peter Mutharika, who is now 84, to contest in next year's election, saying he is too old for the position. However, pandemonium started when the lawmaker Samir Suleiman, who has also long opposed the move, approached Welani Chilinga Wednesday, asking him to consider withdrawing the bill. But this did not please another DPP lawmaker, Mark Bodman, who asked Suleiman to let Chilinga proceed with the bill, resulting in a bitter exchange of words between the two. A physical altercation between Bodman and Suleiman forced a second deputy speaker of parliament, Aisha Mambo Adams, to suspend the proceedings for 20 minutes. Suleiman explained his position on the matter.
I don't want to be part of formulating a bill that will be targeting a certain person or an individual. That's not how I was taught my politics.
Shadrick Namalumba is the spokesperson for the DPP. He says the bill is unconstitutional.
We don't want a situation where a bill comes here, it targets a few individuals against others, and hoping that all the members here will support that bill, and hoping that the president of this nation will accept that bill.
Namalumba said the bill targets Peter Mutharika, a former Malawian leader who at 84 years old has expressed his intention to run in the upcoming elections. However, Chilenga denies this, saying the law would apply to anyone above 80 years of age. Richard Chimwendo Banda is the leader for business in Malawi Parliament. He says the pandemonium which erupted in Parliament is regrettable.
What has happened in the House today is very shameful. It's very, very unfortunate. For us honorable members, we're supposed to display character. That shows that we are honorable. And even the way we save our people, we should show indeed that we are honorable and Malawians can trust us. And I apologize on behalf of all members of Parliament.
As a result, Second Deputy Speaker of Parliament, Mambo Adams, suspended Suleiman from attending the Parliament deliberations for a one-full meeting, while Bodoman was given a two-day suspension. For VOA Africa, I am Lamik Masina in Blantyre.
Kenyan doctors have vowed to continue their 23-day-old strike to demand better pay and improved working conditions. This after a labor court in Nairobi on Wednesday ordered the doctors to suspend the strike and complete negotiations with the government within 14 days. The doctors say the government has failed to implement a collective bargaining agreement signed in 2017. The government has accused the doctors of refusing to compromise. On Wednesday, the government offered to make available 2.4 billion shillings, or a little over $184 million, to cover the deployment of interns or junior doctors. Meanwhile, the strike has paralyzed health services at some hospitals. Dr. Simon Kigondu is the president of the Kenya Medical Association. He tells me that the strike will continue until the government completely addresses all their concerns.
They want to change the terms of reference, which had been captured in a collective bargaining agreement that had been signed in 2017. So the reason why that particular offer is unacceptable.
So that, what about the court order that the doctors should return to work?
When the union called for the strike, the government, through three of the referral hospitals, went to court and wanted the court to annul the strike. But prior to that, the government had not obeyed court orders on three occasions. On the implementation of the collective bargaining agreement, there are three court orders that they have failed to comply with. So when they went to court and the court stayed strike for 2 weeks, the union leaders said that they cannot call off the strike when the government itself has not gone to court with clean hands. So what happened? The government proceeded to file contempt charges, but the court had asked the government to meet the union in conciliation talks. But the government walked out of conciliation talks. So the union also filed contempt charges against the government for walking out of a negotiation. So when the good judge listened to both, he threw out both contempt orders and asked them to have a sit-in and bring to him an agreement in 2 weeks' time. And today is day one, and the government has not reached out to the union yet. And that is the reason it is difficult to actually call off the strike, because we are not sure after you call off the strike that the government will come to the negotiation table.
But that the government has accused the doctors of refusing to compromise.
There are minimum demands that are uncompromisable. And the first uncompromisable demand is that of the pay of junior doctors. The government wants to pay them a stipend that they cannot live on, and that is demeaning the medical profession. That already is a point of departure, and that one the doctors will not budge because of that. And this was as a result of a failure by the government to budget for these junior doctors, and there is no way that that the junior doctors, because of the work they do and the amount what was agreed in the collective bargaining agreement, what they should be paid. In fact, it should be increased because the cost of living has gone up and the pay cannot be reduced. So that one is non-negotiable.
Dr. Simon Kigondu is the president of the Kenya Medical Association. Kenya Health Cabinet Secretary Suzanne Nakumicha and her aide did not respond to our request for comment. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, April 5th. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And still to come on our program, Samson O'Malley Sports. Somalia said it expelled Ethiopia's ambassador in Mogadishu and ordered the closure of two consulates, one each in the semi-autonomous Puntland region and the breakaway Somaliland region, in a dispute over a port deal. The decision followed a cabinet meeting chaired by Prime Minister Hamza Barre in Mogadishu. A separate statement by Somalia's foreign ministry said it had ordered Ethiopian Ambassador Mukhtar Mohamed Weah to leave the country within 72 hours, effective Thursday. VOA's Kim Lewis spoke with Thibault Nagy, former U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs, about the development.
It's, you know, I hate to use the word snit fit, but it's what Somalia is having over the port deal that was, you know, developed between Somaliland and Ethiopia. Even though it's still very aspirational, preliminary stages, you know, no MOU really has been signed or anything, you know, concrete completed. Somalia is just extremely upset because they see this as an impingement on their territorial integrity by Ethiopia, when in fact Somaliland is much more a real state, a de facto state. Somalia is a de jure state, but it has a lot less of what we would normally recognize as the functions of a state than what Somaliland has.
Yes, so these tensions really have been growing since January, as you mentioned. Going forward, moving ahead, do you think this deal will ever materialize?
I think the deal will materialize because Somalia is showing more and more desperation in trying to kill the deal. I mean, you know, it's very ironic that there are Ethiopian troops inside Somalia at the request of the Somali government to help them in their fight against al-Shabaab. Now, we will see if the Ethiopian consulate in Somaliland is actually closed by Ethiopia. Then that would signal to me that Ethiopia is in fact concerned and may, you know, backtrack on the deal. I personally do not see that happening. You know, Somalia is demanding that the Ethiopian consulate in Hargeisa, Somaliland, be closed under this imagination that they, Somalia, control Somaliland. And they have the right to demand that the consulate in Hargeisa be closed. So that to me would be an indication. If Ethiopia basically thumbs its nose at the Somali demand and continues to operate the consulate in Hargeisa, then, you know, that would be an indication to me that they will go ahead with the deal. The consulate in Garowa is a little more iffy because Puntland actually, even though this past weekend they said that they were suspending participation in the Somali Federation, Puntland is much more an integral part of Somalia than Somaliland ever was. So we'll see what happens with the Ethiopian consulate in Garowa. But I would be astounded if the Ethiopians actually closed their consulate in Hargeisa.
Thibault Nagy is the former U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs. He spoke with U.S. Kim Lewis on the eve of the anticipated rollout of a new gold-backed currency. Zimbabwe's central bank announced on Thursday it has 2.5 tons of gold reserves. Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare.
Speaking in Harare after seeing the assets of the Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe, John Mshakarara, the new bank's governor told President Emmerson Mnangagwa that the bank's balance sheet was healthy, with reserves of gold and other minerals worth $175 million.
One of the first pieces I had to do, I wanted to work was to verify the assets and the Zimbabwe reports. And this morning, I showed clearly the gold that is in the vaults that I can confirm that we have in the vaults at the Central Bank 1.1 tons of gold. We also have other precious minerals in the form of diamonds and so forth, which is related to gold. We equal to about 0.4 tons of gold. We have other gold which is held offshore.
On Friday, Mushakara is expected to announce the introduction of a gold-backed currency to replace the worthless dollar, which is currently trading at around 30,000 to $1 US, and unlike the South African rand, does not circulate in neighboring countries. This was the first time in recent memory that the central bank gave an accounting of its gold and mineral assets. President Mnangagwa said he was happy to physically see the assets, which outgoing Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe Governor John Mangunja handed over to Mushakara.
Let me assure you that my government does not work with rumors. We work with facts. Rumors can continue flying, but you've been able to come here and see the facts yourselves. So you should compare the facts you stick to deal with, the rumors you hear in the streets. So when we say this is what we have, at least you have come and you have believed. But what you publish, some will believe and some will believe. And you will go by facts that are on the ground, and not speculation that is in the streets.
The press conference generated much debate on social media, with some saying the country's gold reserves were being looted. One businessman allied with the ruling ZANU-PF party, Pensai Sapkwanya, said he delivered 13 tons of gold to the central bank last year. Zimbabwe has introduced and abandoned at least five currencies since independence in 1980, all of which lost value to become almost worthless. Now it remains to be seen how well the new gold-backed currency is accepted by the public and how it trades against the dollar and the South African rand. Columbus Mavungam, VOA News, Harare.
The Nigerian Electricity Regulatory Commission says the recent triple increase in electricity tariffs will attract more investment into the country's struggling power sector. Labor and civil society groups are criticizing the new rate, saying citizens are forced to pay for what they call darkness. Patrick Winyopugi is an economics lecturer at the University of Port Harcourt in Rivers State. He tells VOA's Chinedu Ofor that the Nigerian government can fix the ailing power sector without a tariff hike.
I do not see any reason why government at this moment, whereby we are having the downline on our currency and that is affecting the economy seriously, and government is increasing tariff, worsening the condition of the people in the country. I don't see reason for that, to justify that increase. Ordinarily, what government should be doing now is to reduce the suffering on the people. But instead, government is increasing in the suffering, irrespective of the fact that the dollar and naira exchange rate is not in the advantage.
The government on its own is saying that it is necessary to increase tariffs so it will be able to repair and fix what they refer to as epileptic power supply, and that it has run out of money to do this except tariffs are increased.
I don't think government has a proper economic team that reason in that perspective. If you want to do a comparative study about other economies, other countries around, even smaller countries like Togo, Cotonou, around us, they don't need an increase in tariff to fix power problem in Nigeria. What they need is a better infrastructure. What is GE doing, General Electric doing, that's in America? What are they doing? If they hire GE into Nigeria, they will give them some better options on how to fix power. It's not about tariff. Say you increase tariff and the investors will still make money at the expense of the people. Tariff is not a measure. What we're looking for is better infrastructure to bring back the power sector. Nigeria House river, we can have hydropower. Nigeria has coal from Enugu, we have coal energy. So what are we doing? Is it the option? Maybe government, they've not started to think of what to do properly.
That's Patrick Nwiyopuki, an economics lecturer at the University of Port Harcourt, Rivers State, Nigeria. He spoke with viewers, Chinedu Ofowo. It is time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you too, James. We begin the sport with the official release of the FIFA rankings for the month of March 2024, with some interesting developments from the African nations. The Atlas Lions occupy 13th spot in the world, but retain pole position on the continent, followed by Senegal, who are 17th in the world and 2nd in Africa. Finalists are the recent CAF Africa Cup of Nations. Nigeria moved to 30th in the world, while also making it into the top 3 in Africa, just behind Senegal and Morocco. African champions Cote d'Ivoire moved to 38th in the world and take up the 5th spot on the continent, just behind 4th place Egypt, who are 88th in the world. North African powerhouses Tunisia and Algeria remain 41st and 43rd on the global rankings in that order, and are followed by Mali, who moved 3 places up to 44. The top 3 nations in the world are world champions Argentina, followed by France and Belgium in 3rd. Staying with football news, former South African junior international Luke Fleurs, who played for the country's most popular soccer club, Kaizer Chiefs, was killed in the carjacking incident in Johannesburg. Police spokesperson Lieutenant Colonel Mavela Masondo told reporters that the 24-year-old was shot in the chest at a gas station on Wednesday night, and the assailants drove off in his vehicle. No arrest has been made so far. The centre-back played every minute for South Africa at the Tokyo Olympic Games in 2021, and that same year was called up to the senior team for World Cup qualifiers against Ethiopia, though he did not make it off the bench and was uncapped. And now to Cameroon, where the Cameroonian Football Federation president Samuel Eto'o has written to the country's sports ministry to denounce its illegal appointment of Belgian Marc Brice as the new national team coach. The federation, known as FECAFOOT, said it regretted not being involved closely nor remotely in the selection process for the new coach and his staff. The Cameroonian Football Federation said the act goes against the presidential decree relating to the organization of Cameroon's national football teams, which specifies that FECAFOOT is responsible for their management. The 61-year-old Baez, who has coached a number of clubs in Belgium, the Netherlands and Saudi Arabia, succeeds Regibet Song, whose contract was not renewed by Eto'o after Cameroon were knocked out in the last 16 of this year's Africa Cup of Nations. In basketball news, Ugandan champions City Oilers have appointed Moroccan gaffer Nesbar Karim to lead them through to the 2024 Basketball Africa League. The Oilers are in the Nile Conference group phase, which takes place in Cairo, Egypt, from Friday, April 19th. And that's it for this Friday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a wonderful weekend. And that's it for this Friday, April 5th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending your week with us. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV show, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing that you well, have a great weekend. We'll see you again on Monday morning.
Around the o'clock, the Voice of America keeps you in touch with the latest news.
Tune in at the top of every hour, every day of the week.
For the 5-Minute VOA Newscast.
We bring you reports from our correspondents and interviews with newsmakers from around the globe.
Give us 5 minutes and we'll give you the world.
VOA, your trusted source for news and information.